Hello, I'm Christine Malika, PhD, and this is Interview with a Therapist. I'm a licensed psychologist, and each episode, I will be asking 10 questions to a professional in the field of mental health. Please note, in order to protect current or former clients' privacy, in accordance with HIPAA and confidentiality laws, all identifying information has been changed. Today, on Interview with a Therapist, I'll be speaking with Dr. Lara Traeger, a licensed psychologist who specializes in behavioral medicine, a field that combines knowledge in the biological, behavioral, psychological, and social sciences to improve health and well-being. Dr. Traeger works at the Massachusetts General Hospital in Boston, Massachusetts. She focuses on treating adults affected by cancer. As a personal aside, we were not only coworkers at a large management consulting firm in New York City, but we both also attended University of Miami for our doctorates. Welcome, Lara. How are you today?
I'm doing great. I'm excited to be here. Thanks for having me.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you today. So let's talk. My first question for you today is, which psychologist or figure in the field do you most admire?
Well, I'm not someone who typically idealizes any one person. So I think for me, mental health care requires the dedication of a lot of different people. People who are teaching new therapists, researching ways to improve treatments, advocating for change, and even things like your podcast, which are working to increase understanding of mental health care. I think it's really just a collective effort. So I've met so many people in my career who are dedicating their lives to this field, and they're passionate about making a difference in their own way, and I just admire that. So I will say that.
Excellent. Thank you. Second question, which case will you never forget?
I have so many of these, but I'll share one. For the interest of time, I'll share one.
Okay.
I treated a person who was coping with an incurable cancer, and we worked together until about a month before they passed away. They had come from a difficult family circumstances during their childhood, which had led to a lot of emotional pain in their adulthood. And at the same time, they had this indomitable spirit. You can feel it in the room. Mm. And this really strong desire to strengthen their well-being and just find some peace. So up until the end of their life, even as they were suffering with a lot of medical complications, they were always taking these active steps to improve their quality of life and their relationships, and they just never gave up.
Wow.
Yeah, it had a really big impact on me. So, you know, for me as a psychologist, I need to believe that in each person's ability to change. And I think the reason this patient stays with me is because they just really renewed my faith in that capacity to change regardless of what's going on at the time.
Mm. What an amazing patient. And that's when they say, like, why is it that the good people always get cancer? You know, there's that anecdotal talk with oncologists that, like, the angry, mean people don't get cancer for some reason.
This person was a wonderful soul. Yeah. I'll agree with that.
Mm. What is the most frustrating thing about your job?
I can answer that very quickly. Even when any of us are willing to go to psychotherapy, we face a lot of barriers to accessing it, like out-of-pocket expenses, low volume of psychotherapists in your area, health insurance coverage issues, long wait lists, things like that. It's just frustrating. So in the clinic where I work, I have a limit on how long I can continue to see a patient. Mm. So when I need to refer someone to a psychotherapist in the local community for longer-term care, I find myself trying to explain to them why the processes are difficult, and I just wish it were easier.
Yeah, I hear that. I mean, it's and sort of ditto for getting someone to see a psychiatrist. It's just so hard to access counselors and psychiatrists right now, and it has been for years.
Right. It has been for years, and I think it's even harder now.
Mm. Why do you think that is?
It may be because during the current pandemic, I think people's stress levels are just higher. Mm. And they're also home, and they're more able to make time for seeing someone, because a lot of therapy visits now are being done remotely or virtually via mm-hmm. video conference or phone. So I think the demand is just higher.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. And we're seeing like a sprouting up more and more of these services that hire therapists to do their sort of via their platform telehealth, which we were seeing before the pandemic. And now I'm seeing them really advertised, like text with a therapist or do FaceTime with a therapist. And it's through like a larger national company. And you, I don't think they use insurance. I feel like you just have to pay out of pocket, but they try and give an array of like lots of doctors and specialties, including therapists. I think one, I can't remember the names of them, but I feel like there's like four or five I always see advertised.
Well, whatever it is, I'm hoping that, you know, this current time and what we're experiencing and more access to and exposure to these other methods of connecting with a therapist can increase access to good quality care.
What do you consider your biggest professional success?
Good question. I've had successes in my career that I'm proud of, but honestly, and I don't know if you can relate to this, but the day that I was accepted into graduate school for clinical psychology, which is hard enough as it is, was my most important day. I feel like I knew that if I could just have the opportunity to train, then I would work my hardest, learn everything I could, and get to where I needed to be. So, and that turned out to be true.
Well, that's excellent. And it's so funny how like sometimes the hardest step of the career is the gatekeeping step. Like you said, just getting in can be so difficult. These programs where they let in four people per professor or four people per year, you know, like it's a huge limiting factor.
So. Exactly. So I felt like at that time, just being able to do that was going to get me where I needed to be.
Well, that's wonderful. How does being a psychologist affect your home life?
It's probably best to ask my family about this. At home, just like at work, I tend to have a heightened sense of people's emotions and reactions to things, even subtle shifts in the emotional temperature of the room. But with people in my home life, it's not going to be the right thing to jump into a therapist role with them because my relationships at home are a two-way street. So it wouldn't be fair to the other person or fair to me. So I guess, surprise, surprise, at home, I'm not perfectly well adjusted. I'm human at home and I try to remind myself that that's okay.
Okay. That sounds very real and very honest. How do you deal with burnout or vicarious traumatization?
That is a very real issue. In my job, I work side by side with physicians and nurses and other clinicians. So I'm at risk for emotional fatigue. And then I'm also surrounded by other people who experience it too. So it's a very real thing. I know exactly when it happens to me because I can see I start to lose my empathy for other people. That's my mark. And it's hard to manage that because it's not like you can just cancel your appointment schedule. But there are a few things that I do to strengthen myself against it happening. So for one, I talk about it with my colleagues. We tend to use a lot of dark humor when we talk to each other. We're probably closer with each other than maybe colleagues in other types of jobs, I think because of the nature of what we do. And I also diversify what I do. So I don't spend my entire week doing psychotherapy. I also do research and teach, and those are important roles for me too. And then something that I kind of learned over time, I didn't know to do this at first when I started my career, but now I do it a lot. I try to do unique things outside of work, like giving talks to community organizations or going to conferences and things like that, that aren't necessarily part of my job, but they're kind of adjacent to my job. And this helps me connect with people who care about the same things that I do. And it reminds me why I still do it.
Okay. That's good. That's a unique answer from what we've heard of sort of doing professionally adjacent activities to allow you maybe experience parts of the field where you're getting more joy without as much emotional output.
Right. I think it's like you said, it's joy. It's also that sense of identity that I am a psychologist. It's an identity I enjoy, and I can share that with others. So that sort of helps me strengthen it.
Right. What is something you remember learning from a patient?
As I kind of said, I work with patients who have serious medical illnesses, and I've learned from more than one patient that, you know, no matter what kind of illness you may be facing, the hardest type of pain to tolerate is often emotional pain. Mm. I think we all do so much to avoid painful emotions that it's almost like experiencing them is a sign of weakness or something that needs to be fixed quickly. So I think I've learned from patients that it's a relief for a patient to hear that in the face of an abnormal situation, that their emotional reaction is normal.
Okay. Yeah, you have a very unique view as a health psychologist versus maybe some of the other people who I've interviewed where, like you said, you're specifically working with people with cancer or perhaps terminal illnesses like cancer. And that's definitely a certain special area of patients.
Yeah, I think it's that, you know, when you're faced with a very serious illness for the first time, it's so different than anything you've ever experienced before. It's really taking the curtains down from your, you know, ability to feel like you're going to live forever. These are difficult situations. We don't always have the tool set to be able to deal with them. So I tend to see this, that it's helpful for people to hear that even when their emotions are really painful, that it's normal to feel that way. Hmm.
If you weren't a psychologist, what career do you think you would be?
So, oddly enough, I've wanted to be a psychologist since I was very young. I'm not even sure I knew what it was at the time. I was so young, but I somehow had it in me that I wanted to do this. But if I weren't a psychologist, I probably would have wanted to pursue a career as a writer. I've always loved creative writing.
I think, didn't you study creative writing in undergrad, or if I remember that?
It was part of my college years. I took a lot of classes in creative writing, and I loved it.
Well, I can add here as a personal note that I think if you hadn't been the person proofreading large chunks of my dissertation, I don't think I would have gotten through that process. So I can attest to you being an excellent writer and editor.
Thank you so much. I don't remember that, but I appreciate you saying that.
Yes, you were instrumental in the proofreading and writing part of my dissertation.
Oh my God, dissertation writing is tough times.
Yes. If you could make one change to the field of psychotherapy, what would it be and why?
So, my one change would be to integrate psychotherapy and mental health in general more fully with healthcare in general. I think we miss out when we separate mental health care from other types of healthcare. We're missing out on so many ways that mental health strategies can be integrated with medical care to improve our health and well-being, just in so many ways.
Mm. Yeah, that's actually a really big point, an important point, especially coming from someone who's straddling, I feel like, the world of psychology and the world of medical health in your role. Mm-hmm. So that is
right.
Yeah.
I think if you look at some of the major health issues that we face nationally, internationally, say something like heart disease or, you know, the risk of heart attacks, that the role of stress in some of these illnesses is so huge. So combining, like I said, mental health care with regular medical care has a lot of opportunity to improve health in so many ways.
Yeah, and I hope that's a direction we're going to be headed. And it's so cynical to say, but I would assume the insurance companies, of course, would want to do it because it ultimately would lower their costs with people being healthier, like you said, with some of the larger health issues that plague our country. And that's a cynical way to look at it, but maybe that's the thing that will drive getting some of these things integrated is when they realize how important it is to have the mental health on board with some of these, I don't know, they call them sort of like social illnesses or like things that people struggle with weight management or smoking or, so I hear that. Do you follow?
Exactly. Yeah. And I think, go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead.
was just going to say that, I mean, I think that's part of the idea that it takes a village, because you're right. It's not, I don't think it's cynical. I think it's very realistic that we need data to show that we can actually make these improvements.
Do you follow any religious or spiritual path?
I was born and raised Jewish. It's part of my history, my culture, even my sense of humor. And I think on some level, it probably informs my tendency to be curious and to question things. But I actually don't know how often my patients are guessing my religion or thinking about it. During holiday season, patients often wish me a Merry Christmas or a Happy Easter. And I just take it as a nice gesture.
I have a bonus question I like to ask. What do you wish to tell non-therapists that are listening in?
This is such a great opportunity, and thank you for this bonus question. I think what I would like to say is really basic. It's don't suffer alone. Psychological distress can be so isolating, even when you're surrounded by loved ones. So if you have the opportunity to attend a psychotherapy visit, my wish is to just say, try it. It will give you something that is different than just talking with a loved one. Give it a chance.
So an invitation from you to the non-therapists out there. Wonderful.
I like how you said that, an invitation.
Well, it's been wonderful talking to you today. And that is the end of our interview for today. I thank you so much for coming on. And I hope that we can catch up again soon.
Thank you so much for this opportunity. It's been great.
Bye-bye. Thank you for joining us on Interview with a Therapist. As always, I hope these episodes both help humanize the therapist and help destigmatize seeking mental health treatment. If you are interested in seeking therapy, apa.org/helpcenter is one place to start. If you are a family member of someone seeking help, NAMI.org can be useful. That's NAMI.org. You can find us on Instagram at Interview Therapist. Please note that comments or messages on social media are not monitored regularly and is not to be used for any treatment concerns or emergencies. If you are experiencing a mental health crisis, please call 911 in your local area or call 1-800-273-8255 nationally. This podcast does not constitute therapeutic advice or treatment.